Chapter 10 The Lord High Sheriff. Davin could hardly believe it. He had hoped the matter would, at most, result in a couple of interviews with captains of the city watch, but as soon as he heard one of the officers say, quadruple homicide, he knew his plans to hand over the evidence and waltz off into the city were naive. After 2 hours of interrogation by a diffident and soft-spoken Captain Gunnell, he heard the dreaded pronouncement, Get the Lord High Sheriff out of bed and get this man and Mr. Masterson to the palace for interrogation. As they led him at gunpoint through the quiet, dark streets of Belshire, his imagination conjured up images of spike-covered torture devices in a dimly lit and reeking portion of the Queen's dungeon. The reality, fortunately, proved much more accommodating. Captain Gunnell shoved him into a windowless room on the bottom floor of the palace, a room that was several times the superior of the apartment he had rented for the past several months. A simple but commodious bed beckoned to him while a table, washbasin and armoire completed the furnishings. Not quite fit for a noble, but more than adequate for a commoner. The fire had even been lit. A puffy-eyed Lord High Sheriff, accompanied by a couple of officers, entered an hour later. While not in the same realm of size as the hulking Dales, the Lord High Sheriff stood tall and wide. He had grey hair and a moustache used to curling, but the late hour rendered it a little limp. Davin greeted him with a bow and asked him to sit, which he declined. The sheriff measured Davin with a stern gaze and then started the interview the same way as Captain Gunnell, asking about his background, scrutinising the evidence he had provided, and picking over the details of the deadly encounter in the warehouse. Surely you have inspected the load by now, Davin said after explaining the particulars again. What was in the crates? The Lord High Sheriff, who had paced for the entire interrogation, rounded on him from across the room.
That's none of your business at present. I will tell you, Mr. Harper, that Mr. Masterson, whom I interviewed first, paints quite a different picture of the whole affair. By his account, you are a fiend and an embezzler. Fortunately for you, I am quite convinced that Mr. Masterson is a filthy scoundrel. Be aware, however, that my poor opinion of him in no way improves my opinion of you. You look the clerk and clearly are, or were, a man of quality. But not everything about you fits. After decades of working the streets, I can smell a man hiding something just as sure as I can smell rum sweat on an alley drunk.
I give you my word, Davin began. The Lord High Sheriff interrupted him with a sardonic belly laugh.
Give me your word! Might as well close the investigation now, right? Because of your word? Flame and flood. I've had enough words given to me that I could fill the pages of a book. A thick one, mind you. I'd much rather criminals give me a fine country ham than their word. At least I could do something useful with a ham.
The sheriff walked toward the door.
You get some rest, Mr. Harper. We should be at the bottom of this mess tomorrow. Nice saber-toothed daggers, by the way, he said of Davin's confiscated weaponry. We don't see that kind of craft here in the city. I almost hope you're guilty so I can keep them.
Davin thought his worries and curiosity would keep sleep at bay that evening, but the opposite proved true. His alleyway apartment was a breeding ground for noise. If the neighbour's children above him weren't jumping up and down until the ceiling seemed ready to crack asunder, the cats outside would launch into an early morning scuffle over the innards of a rat. The streets of the Crooks never slept, or if they did, they slept poorly. The palace apartment was as quiet as a coffin in a crypt, and when the officer pounded on the door in the morning, Davin sat bolt upright with the delightful realisation that he had actually enjoyed hours of uninterrupted sleep. After a stretch, he stepped out of bed and tested his ankle, finding it bulky and stiff. Thankfully, it wasn't sprained or broken, and after a bit of use, loosened up. He washed his face and replaced his shirt and jacket. A plate of breakfast came next, a delicious offering of toasted bread, eggs, and the sheriff's apparent favourite, ham. He savoured it all, grateful for the departure from the apples and crusty bread that his paltry pay made standard fare for morning meals. After polishing off the toast, he licked the butter from his fingers.
Perhaps being the Queen's prisoner would be a suitable profession if I can't manage caravan guard.
He hadn't felt so rested and well-fed in months. The door banged open just as he drank the last of the mulled cider, and the Lord High Sheriff entered looking prim and proper, in a pressed uniform of black and gold. His puffy eyes betrayed that he had not passed his night as comfortably as his prisoner. Davin stood and bowed.
"Let's go," he ordered, voice a little hoarse. "The Queen wants to interview the both of you personally."
"What?"
"You heard me. Out with you."
Numb, Davin grabbed his shabby coat and followed the Lord High Sheriff out the door. Would the Queen recognize him? While he had corresponded with the Queen a great deal, he had presented himself personally to Philippa only twice while he was still a baron, once upon coming into his majority and claiming his estate, and the second time to seek her favour to marry Emile Ironhorn nearly 4 years ago. Surely the Queen saw so many faces that his bespectacled, bearded disguise and apparent poverty would suffice. Then again, she was flame-touched, and her gift one of discernment. He swallowed hard, feeling a little sweaty and not from the temperature. The light slanting in through the pointed arch windows put the time at mid-morning. Now he wished he could get outdoors and enjoy views of pale green leaves struggling to emerge from the branches as spring took hold. As if to spite the horrors of the night before, the day shone cheerily, birds flitting from sky to branch and back to the sky again. If this interview didn't go well, he might never see them again. As they neared the antechamber to the Queen's Hall, a grumpy, bound Mr. Masterson sneered at him from around two guards that held him fast. Davin wondered why he himself wasn't similarly restrained.
"There you are, you ruddy bastard," Mr. Masterson spat, straining at his irons. "Told the sheriff a long story, I'm sure. You always had it out for me. The truth will out, Mr. Harper. I'll show him what you really are."
"Shut your mouth or I'll knock the teeth out of your head," the sheriff warned.
Couric grumbled something incomprehensibly to himself and fixed his eyes on Davin with a stare that would have cured meat. Davin ignored him, wondering why this wasn't heading to the courts. Having a matter brought to the direct attention of the Queen after only one night's investigation seemed odd. While he knew four murdered men were not to be taken lightly, that the Queen would take a personal interest so quickly seemed extraordinary. Perhaps she felt her honour bruised by the fraud perpetrated upon the Aid Society, a cause she had personally endorsed. If Mr. Masterson failed to convince her of his innocence, the rest of his life would either be very short or very miserable. Maybe both. At length the doors ponderously opened, revealing the ox statue at the entrance to the hall. The Lord High Sheriff and his men prodded him forward. Davin pushed his fake glasses up closer to his eyes, stooped as if he had been clerking for 50 years, and exaggerated the limp from his aching ankle. His hat he had to doff in the Queen's presence, but he hoped his thick beard and common clothing would render him unrecognizable even to Philippa's sharp gaze. With a stately stride, the Lord High Sheriff led them forward. Davin and Couric came up behind on either side, each flanked by a soldier. Few nobles populated the gallery for the morning inquiry, for which Davin was grateful. The Queen of Bittermarch leaned on the armrest of her throne, chin in her hand. Her elderly countenance was troubled, but as they entered her piercing gaze, took them all in. Abruptly she smiled, failing to stifle a surging laugh. Davin swallowed hard. When she composed herself, her mouth was turned up in amusement, though her eyes exuded severity.
"What rabble have you brought me this morning?" the Queen asked the Lord High Sheriff. "I somehow expected the perpetrators of this atrocity to be a bit more grandiose. These two appear to be a couple of scrawny rats from the crooks."
The sheriff bowed.
"And so they are, Your Grace. Nonetheless, the matter is grave, as I am sure you are well aware. How should you like to proceed?"
"Let them speak, by all means. Mr. Masterson, are you aware of the charges levelled against you by your clerk?" she asked.
"That I am, Your Ladyship. All a pack of rotten tripe invented by this woolly-faced fart."
The Lord High Sheriff smacked Couric upside the head.
"Watch your language, or I'll lop your tongue off."
Philippa let Couric shovel up his side of the tale, light though it was on details, but heavy on insults for the rascal David Harper. The Queen listened carefully and silently, letting Couric vent and plead and accuse. Davin hardly felt threatened by any of Couric's nervous and barely coherent testimony. He was more terrified that someone would recognize him.
"Thank you, Mr. Masterson," the Queen said once Couric had finished. "Now, Mr. Harper, correct?"
"Yes, my lady."
"You seem unperturbed by your employer impugning your honour in nearly every conceivable way. Do you have a better tale to tell, or simply no honour to impugn?
I am simply comfortable in the truth, Your Highness, he stated confidently. Unlike the accusations of Mr. Masterson, mine are accompanied by evidence and proof. You have the documents I collected, as well as the seized wagons. I don't doubt that given a little time, the Lord High Sheriff will find more witnesses and evidence beyond what I have already provided. I shall be exonerated from the charges Mr. Masterson has levied against me, and the full treachery of the Boot and Wheel Caravan Company will be exposed. I stand ready to provide testimony at your convenience.
He's a bloody liar! Curric yelled.
Don't listen! The Queen stood with some effort. You will keep your tongue, Mr. Masterson, she scolded sharply. I've yet to take the full measure of Mr. Harper, but you are a scoundrel, a thief, and a murderer. Sheriff, remove him, please. Find one of our more unpleasant cells and dump him in it.
Yes, Your Grace.
She returned to her seat and waited while the guards guided a red-faced, shaking Curric from the room. The Queen folded her hands in his lap, Davin suffering under her searching stare for several moments.
Now, Mr. Harper, she said, if you'll be so kind as to relate to me how you came to work for the Boot and Wheel Caravan Company, how you became aware of the mishandling of the Aid Society funds, and what your motivations were for coming forward. Spare no detail, and please be thorough when you describe the events that precipitated the murders yesterday evening. Your freedom and your life depend upon it.
Davin nodded and began, retelling the lie about his fabricated past and then relating the entire affair. The Queen and the Lord High Sheriff listened intently, and halfway through his tale, the audience in the gallery started to swell, owing, he supposed, to news of the incident spreading about town. Davin spoke with confidence, but also with growing discomfiture as the weight of more and more eyes bore down upon him. Hardly anyone in the gallery breathed as he told of the final scuffle between Dales and his thugs, and once finished, he thought his ordeal and his actions had earned him a bit of respect all around.
As for my motives, Your Grace, he finished, I had no other object than the welfare of the kingdom, and righting a clear wrong perpetrated by base and vile men. As I stated previously, I stand ready to give my testimony to any court where this case will be heard.
The Queen smiled now, head resting on her hand.
This is the only court necessary for this particular matter. Since the Aid Society was a cause I supported, I wished to hear this case personally. My gift of discernment tells me you are in earnest, Mr. Harper. Indeed, such a man of principle and courage is a rare find these days. Forgive me if we keep you cooped up for a while longer while the matter is more thoroughly investigated, though I promise you better accommodations than those Curric will enjoy.
I'm at your service, and thank your ladyship for your consideration, he said, genuflecting.
Very well, she replied. But one last question. Now that your employment is at an end, what will you do for your own support?
I have yet to resolve that matter, as my previous employment ended rather abruptly. She smiled.
I am glad to hear it.
Your Grace?
Why, you shall work for me. Once we have fully settled on your innocence, and I am sure it will take but a few days, you will report to my head clerk, Mr. Lambert, and serve there as an under-clerk. It may not surprise you that the under-clerk who handled the Aid Society funds has up and vanished, and thus a position has opened up. We could use a suspicious set of eyes during these treacherous times. Does this please you?
He thought to ask if he might serve under the huntsman or even the carriage guard instead, but he didn't wish to jeopardize his unexpected good fortune.
You are very generous, Your Grace. I will accept, if you wish it. Very good. Sheriff, find a nice room for Mr. Harper to stay in for a few days. One with a window, I think. Afford him every comfort.
The Lord High Sheriff bowed. By his countenance, Davin could tell he wasn't as convinced as the Queen of Mr. Harper's credit and character.
As you wish, Your Grace, he replied before
signalling Davin and the remaining soldier to leave the hall. Davin followed obediently behind, grateful to escape the curious gaze and excited comments erupting from the gallery. Once out of the hall, he reaffixed his hat. An underclerk. Davin shook his head.
Not ideal, though it did afford him one opportunity.
When he had left Frostworn behind, he thought he would have little opportunity to aid the Queen in rooting out what she clearly believed was a burgeoning conspiracy in the North. Now, here in Belshire, it appeared that he might be of some use to her still.
and he had a good place to start nosing about. At the very least, he wouldn't be sweeping up pecan shells and swabbing up Dales's spit.